the third time's a charm.
Three is a magic number.
The third time's a charm. The third time's a charm. The third time's a charm. The third time's a charm.
Hello and welcome to Third Time's a Charm, the show that takes an in-depth look at the third installment of a franchise. This is episode 24, Starship Troopers 3, Marauder. I'm your host, Sky Marshal Mike, and welcome, citizens, one and all. So on today's episode, I have from the host of the legendary Monkey Club, Christian Larson. He's back. He was one of the three guests during the WrestleMania 3-month extravaganza, so he's back here to talk Starship Troopers, not just part 3, but 1 and 2 as well. So, he's basically my Starship Troopers consultant at this point. So, you know the deal, so without further ado, there's no part 3.
No, no, no.
Part 3.
Today on No Part 3, I thought I'd switch it up a little bit, you know, not a movie, not a game, but like an actual real-life event, World War III. Come on, man, where are you, World War III? You're basically just taunting us at this point. But are there any great World War III movies out there? You know, I wouldn't necessarily review them on this show unless I switched up the format. You know, if I just reviewed movies about World War III, would I have to review other movies with the number 3 in them? I don't know. Three Amigos, 3 Days at the Condor. I think I've said something like this at one point before. Anyway.
No, no, no.
Part 3.
Now that that's out of the way, we can get into the actual show, the main show here, and grab your bug repellent, meet me on the starship, and away we go.
It's a good day to die, when you know the reasons why. Citizens, we fight for what is right. A noble sacrifice, when duty calls, you pay the price. For the Federation, I will give my life.
Like to know more?
Would you like to know more?
That's a good one. Oh man, Larson, I'm so glad you're here. Welcome back, first of all, to Third Time's a Charm. Christian Larson, everybody.
Thank you, thank you. It's good to be back.
You were here for the epic WrestleMania month.
I was indeed, yeah. That was so much fun.
That was a blast. That was a lot of fun. I'm glad I got you back here for a solo visit, though. I've been wanting this for a long time, getting you here all to myself.
Well, it's good to be here. And honestly, I'm so glad that you gave me the opportunity to watch the sequels to one of my all-time favorite movies. I mean, Starship Troopers is not only a favorite movie by one of my most favorite filmmakers, Paul Verhoeven, but it's such a great satire. It says so much about society, and it's no secret that it's by the same screenwriter as RoboCop. And what blew my mind was that both sequels were written by Ed Neumeier, the same screenwriter.
Yeah, that was a shock to me. To be quite honest, I didn't even know there was a third Starship Troopers until I started doing this show. I have Sci-Fi Channel, so I'm aware of the second one.
Yeah.
I think I had seen it there. I, of course, am also in love with the original Starship Troopers. And to be quite honest, it took me a while to get that movie. When I first saw it, I just kind of saw it as another action blockbuster. And I didn't quite read the subtext, you know? It took me like 2 or 3 viewings and a couple friends to say, you really got to approach it from another angle. And then everything kind of clicked with me. And ever since, it's just been a great rewatch. I've rewatched that one all the time.
Oh, for sure. I mean, I was lucky enough to be able to introduce this film at the Alamo Drafthouse, and I looked into it. I did a lot of reading into it, and it's basically the greatest movie about 9/11 that was made in 1996. Like, it is all about a disaster that brings everyone together and ignites this sort of nationalism. And it makes us want to go to war against something that we don't know anything about, but we just know it has to be defeated. And the second and third movies take that to a different place, which is really interesting. And that is why, like, I'm really interested in talking to you about this, because your podcast is all about seeing how it gets from the first movie to the third movie. And it's definitely an interesting journey.
Oh, yeah. And I couldn't believe, like you said, they got the same screenwriter for two and three.
Yeah.
And he winds up directing part three.
Right?
Which is even crazier.
Yeah,
which
yeah,
is
yeah.
great. Yeah, just a quick few things about that first one, too, before we move on, though. You mentioned how, like, it fits so well into the post-9/11 landscape and everything like that. But, like, before that, this is, like, a total propaganda dystopian, like, fascist state. Like, kind of a nightmare future, if you will, where no one's aware that they're living in a nightmare. They think it's, like, a paradise. They think it's a utopia.
Oh, yeah. One of the things, I talked about when I introduced it was that this movie was as if there was a 1940s propaganda movie made about a futuristic space bug war. You've got the hometown guy who's doing it for his best gal. You've got the newsreel parts. Like, everything about it is so propaganda. And that is one of the things that was kind of lost on the audience back in the 90s.
You know, this is Third Time's a Charm, so we're going to talk primarily about Starship Troopers 3 Marauder.
Mm-hmm.
But let's go down the line and let's talk a little bit about the second one, since you mentioned this is the first time you've seen it. This is the first time I've seen it in its entirety. So Starship Troopers 2, Hero of the Federation. What are some quick thoughts about this one, Larson?
Yeah, well, I mean, I read about it, and basically the filmmakers, they were told you're going to have like 5% of the budget of the first movie. So they were like, all right, we're going to make a movie that takes place in one spot. And they really did a really good job of making it sort of this claustrophobic thriller where the bugs were controlling the minds of certain people. I don't want to give too much away. And they were able to inject some elements of sort of over-the-top gore that Verhoeven was known for. Not a lot of social commentary, but it was still a very effective, very kind of well-written thriller. And one of the things that kind of confused me was that the actress who was the pilot of the main ship from the first film was the badass sergeant in this second one, and I thought that it was the same character, but it was not. It was just the same actress playing a different role.
Okay, because that character dies on the ship.
Yeah,
on the,
she does. She gets cut in half by a door, but she plays like a badass cigar-chomping sergeant in the second one. And the second one is great. It really is. I mean, they were basically like, look, make a movie for, you know, 1/10 of the budget of the first one. And they did. And it was pretty good.
When you tell me those things, like, I got to go a little easier on this movie. Like, to be quite honest, I had a tough time with part two.
Okay, all right.
It's not that it's bad. It just wasn't what I was expecting from Starship Troopers. Like you say, there really isn't a lot of that underlying commentary. They really kind of back away from like a lot of the newsreel footage stuff. The gore is there,
yeah,
but it kind of felt like and not like it's totally bad or anything, but it kind of felt like an Aliens ripoff in a lot of ways. Like they took that template.
Yeah, of course. Sure.
So what I'm saying is, like, I don't think that it's necessarily bad. It just didn't feel like Starship Troopers to me until, like, we started learning about the new types of bugs and things like that.
Yeah.
But I'm glad you enjoyed it, and I'm glad that I got through it, too, because part three, oh boy.
Yeah, tell me your thoughts on part three. Let's start from there.
Okay, I genuinely like this movie a lot. Like, I can understand how you can sort of look at this and be like, you know, it doesn't have the budget, it doesn't have this, it doesn't have that. But it has, to me, the spirit of the original one again. It feels like all of the commentary and satire is back. We have Casper Van Dien is fucking back for crying out. That is a huge, huge help. I didn't realize how much that helped me sort of connect this to the series again.
part of what made the first movie work was that the actors and actresses in it were these kind of blank slates, and they were sitcom soap opera actors and actresses, which helped with the propaganda film, because these were the kind of actors and actresses that would have been in a propaganda movie in World War II or what have you. And Casper Van Dien is the square-jawed all-American, even though he's from
Buenos Aires.
But he represents everything that this franchise is all about.
This movie works. Like, I was shocked how well this movie works. So we could just start getting into it. We don't have to go beat by beat or anything like that. But I do love the opening, how it starts with the newsreel footage.
Yeah, I love the return to the newsreel. The opening sequence that described the different types of bugs, the kamikaze bugs. It reminded me of the Tremors series. There's probably about 8 Tremors movies now. And as they go on, they had to come up with different kinds of tremors.
Graboids.
Yeah, graboids. And this definitely remind me of that. I mean, the second one showed us that these bugs could crawl down your throat and take over your personality. So there are infinite ways that they can fuck with you. Another thing that they brought up, there are 2 big through lines throughout this movie, satirical through lines, kind of elements that Ed Neumeier, the screenwriter, was definitely trying to delve into. One was the idea of war protesters. There was someone in the first movie who was a traitor who got hanged on national television.
Yeah.
That was a big deal. And they're giving a lot of airtime to these protesters. A guy in a wheelchair kind of reminds me of Born on the 4th of July.
I was just going to say that. Yeah, I don't think an accident that he looks like that.
Absolutely. The other through line is religion. The government is pushing to outlaw religion, which, you know, you look back at fascist governments, they try to push out religion. They say that, you know, religion is the opium of the masses. So there's definitely these 2 themes, the protesters and religion, going through the whole movie.
And that religion theme, I feel, is a little stronger than the other one, because one of our soldiers is going to be religious. And I was so pleased on how that paid off at the end.
Oh, my God. It's so great. I mean, let's get into Sky Marshal Omar Aoki, is it?
Yep, Aoki.
Aoki. Omar Aoki. He is, and again, this is like, he's a celebrity politician. He's on TV. He has a hit album.
Yeah, he's like got a record out. It's called A Good Day to Die.
Yes.
And it's like the national anthem now.
Oh, it's so great.
Being a Starship Trooper.
Yeah. And he sells merch. We're living in an era of celebrity politicians, and he is absolutely one.
Well, you know what that kind of reminded me of, Larson? When we were younger, when the Gulf War was going on, and you hear like Stormin' Norman and all those guys, right? And like they were on TV, and like Powell and all that. You know, like for some reason, generals in wartime were like going on the Tonight Show or something.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, we definitely came up during the Gulf War when these people were celebrities. And I believe James Woods put together a kind of We Are the World to support our troops back in the day. I don't know if you're familiar with that.
Oh, did he? I totally missed it.
Yeah, that reminded me a lot of this. But yeah, and this guy who's like, he's all set to be the biggest politician.
Yeah, he's going to lead Earth or the planet.
Yeah, I mean, I'm kind of confused as to the government setup at this time.
You find out sort of halfway through the movie, it's all like a puppet regime run by that one woman.
Yeah.
She's in charge, and there's even a moment because, you know, Aoki is actually out on mission, like he's in the field, but yet he still needs to like do television stuff. So there's a moment where she's like, you know, sort of pulling a Mysterio. She's like doing the CGI thing backstage and like controlling his image on screen and everything. So there's a real shadow government going on in charge here.
I mean, I love that. I love that aspect. But at the beginning of the movie, you know, the war is still going on. There's an outpost that's besieged. And Casper Van Dien, Johnny Rico, is fighting the good fight out there with a second-in-command who's Russian or Polish. She has a very thick accent.
She definitely, I feel, is sort of designed to look like more like a Denise Richards also.
I feel
like we get those archetype stuff. And I wasn't even sure, but like the guy, the general, Dick Hauser, like her, that's like her boyfriend or whatever, or they're going to get married. That's not supposed to be the guy from the first movie that Doogie Howser's playing, is it?
We're thinking of different people because Johnny Rico has this like Polish woman who's his second in command.
Yeah, and then his friends show up.
But then all of a sudden, there's this African-American officer who shows up with a second in command of his own, and her and Johnny Rico have a history. But yes. The officer, everything about the movie leads me to believe that he's the same guy from the first movie.
Yeah, and it's crazy, and almost like she's supposed to be Carmen,
But
their names are Lola and Dix.
Yeah.
But I almost wish they just recast them and had them as the same characters, because like, how great, how bold, just like...
Yeah, nobody cares.
Yeah.
There's been recasting in other movies, in other TV shows where people get over it. It would have been fun.
I love that Rico is like... The events of the first movie are not lost on this world. Like, everyone knows about his, like, tremendous victory. They talk about the brain bug that they captured at the end of the first movie.
Yes.
I even feel like the new bugs we get at the beginning of this movie are sort of a direct tie into why, like, the bugs from the part two didn't work out, you know, like that plan was foiled.
Sure.
So they're trying these. So I like how everything feels connected.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's no secret that the screenwriter is the same for all three. So he definitely is trying to keep the world together.
You know what was an interesting aspect too is Rico and his crew, they're out on like that, they call it like some kind of farmer planet or something, right? But
yeah,
it's totally just like they're protecting the South. Like they go down there and there's like a big bar brawl because like the locals hate the Starship Troopers.
Yeah.
I know that's not what they're called, but I call them that.
Of course, why not?
And they get into like a huge brawl. So I really like that kind of commentary, the idea that there's humans that are against the war.
Yeah,
I mean, that gets into the protesting stuff.
Yeah, I mean, they're on a farm planet and the farmers on the planet are wearing like overalls and flannel shirts. I remember thinking, like, this is farmers dressed the same way, like, 500 years in the future. I would have thought there'd be some kind of futuristic farmer gear to wear. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, when you even look at, like, Luke Skywalker, right, like, on Tatooine, and, like, all those people, like, they're wearing future farmer gear.
I mean, he's a moisture farmer, but still.
Oh, I'm sorry. Oh, okay.
But yeah, that is very interesting, the whole dynamic between these farmers who they're supposed to be protecting, but they are like, you know, we don't want you here. Get the hell out.
Yeah, and like Rico gets like arrested, but they're like, no, like, right, like you can't arrest Rico. Even though like he's gonna get court-martialed for, you know, basically gets blamed for losing a battle that he really didn't. So like after that bar brawl, I guess you could say, that big like scorpion bug makes a cool appearance, right? And we get more of that gore that really shows up a lot more, I think, in this movie.
Yeah, I mean, there are a lot more instances of battles and deaths. There's a great shot of one of those shovels going through someone's neck, which is really cool. But yeah, there's definitely a lot of good deaths.
I was actually pretty impressed, like with what they were able to do with the budget. At first, I thought the bugs looked too much like PlayStation graphics, but I was surprised how much I got used to it, and they actually use them kind of sparingly and spend their time on those close-up money shots, like when the guy's head like gets decapitated and it's on like the bug's arm and he's like throwing it up in the air and stuff. Like, I really enjoyed that
stuff. Yeah. They absolutely were definitely trying to capture the spirit of the original.
From what I can tell, the movie kind of splits in half around this time. Like, there's this big battle, they get defeated at Rokusan or something. I think I wrote down the Battle of Rokusan.
Yes.
And Rico is blamed and arrested and court-martialed. And some of the troopers are stranded, right? Is this the same? Are they stranded on the same planet, or do they get shot down over another planet?
Yeah, so basically the officer who is Rico's best friend stays with Rico.
Dix. Yeah, the black dude.
Yeah, and the girl, I believe her name is Lola.
Yeah.
The officer who was Rico and Dix's ex-lover escapes to a fleet ship with the Sky Marshal and a ragtag group that includes a very naive girl. And they get shot down and take an escape pod to sort of a desert planet.
Oh, that's right. I thought those escape pods were cool.
Yeah, they were.
Very different looking, right?
They were. And it's very Spaceballs. It's very like they're on this desert planet and they're walking through the dunes. And this is when you find out that the Sky Marshal, who, you know, all the hope of the New World is in this guy. He is the guy.
Yeah, he's like the face of the future.
Yeah, basically. And you start to realize that maybe there's something off about this guy. He spent a lot of time with the brain bug from the first movie. And all of a sudden, he's into religion, which is something that...
It's a no-no.
Yeah, it's
right?
A big no-no. And he's talking about God, and he's talking about how there's something bigger than us. And the naive girl who's with them is sort of falls in with him. And Lola is like, whatever, let's just get the hell out of here.
Yeah, and so while they're walking across the desert planet, trying to, you know, find transport off, trying to get rescued, Rico is going through his court-martial.
Yes.
Which is great. I love how this plays out. Because, you know, it's only like 30 minutes into the movie. They're not going to kill off Rico. But it's just a great sort of pageantry of the state, again, where they're all lined up and he's going to be hanged with the rest of the people who survived the battle. And, like, he falls through the floor and Dix is there and he's like, you didn't think we're going to let you die? Like, you're too valuable. Consider yourself officially dead. And I go, again?
Yes.
This is the second time.
It's true. It's true. And also, this is... Because this is where the movie splits into. We have the batshit Sky Marshal and Lola on the desert planet, and we have Rico and Dix, and they're kind of getting into the whole machinations of the Federation. And there's the woman who, I don't know if she's a Sky Marshal.
I think she's like the secret Sky Marshal, right?
Yeah.
That's the one I was talking about before, where like no one knows she's really in charge.
Yeah, she gives a speech as the Sky Marshal, but it's a hologram. And Rico finds out that she's really running the show. Dix becomes very disillusioned by the whole thing. He's told that they're lost, but there's like an intern that comes to Dix's office, right? And tells him that there's been a distress signal.
Yeah, it seems like they don't want to rescue, like they know about that team stranded on the planet, but they don't want him rescued because she doesn't want the Sky Marshal to survive or something. She doesn't want him back.
Yeah.
Because it's easier to control a fake one. And they also don't know that the Sky Marshal's been compromised by the brain bug and he's on like a secret mission. So I think they catch wind. Yeah, just like a very, like an extra or someone, right? I think like clues him in on like the distress signal. But before we even get there, we get like a lot of cool reveals, like the Q-bomb I thought was really interesting, where they introduce this bomb that can crack an entire planet. We get the Marauder suits. We get the first look at those big mech robot suits, which are going to be really awesome soon. And then on the desert planet, you get your first sort of inkling that there might be like these supermassive bugs under the ground, where like at first you think they're just these maybe dead trees or pillars poking out of the ground. They turn out to like grab people and pull them under and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So like while all this story's going on, they're packing in a lot of world building in this movie too, which kept surprising me. Like they keep pulling the layers off during this movie. It's always turning a new corner. I really like that about it.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, there is a Federation Network newsreel where they talk about the Q-bomb. They talk about how there's like a controversy about whether it's ethical to use a Q-bomb, which could blow up an entire planet. And part of what I think is interesting about this is that on the screen, it's like, what do you think? Vote yes or no. And that's very, very kind of topical, where everything's an opinion these days, you know?
Yeah, or a pole.
Yeah.
Like, that's something new, I feel like. The times have changed since the first Starship Troopers came out.
But indeed.
But if there was Twitter, you would be able to vote in that first movie.
Yeah, no, that's exactly what I felt, too. It's that, like, you know, we're living in this age where everyone's opinion matters, or at least everyone is told their opinion matters, even though it really fucking doesn't. You know, that just gives people something else to talk about. And it made me think, like, if it was such a totalitarian society, who cares what the opinion is? You know, why are they even asking people what the opinion is? It doesn't, in the first movie, it doesn't feel like anyone should have an opinion. It's like, no. This is how it is. Deal with it.
Yeah, so it's kind of funny that there's that illusion, I guess, is what they're getting at.
Yeah,
it's
that's
like,
true.
Oh, we're going to let them feel like they're more free.
Yeah.
But in actuality, there's like probably less choice. If we make them feel like they matter, then we can take away other stuff.
That's true. I mean, that's probably how it is now.
It's pretty rough.
There's a great line in the newsreel about the Q bomb. That's controversy spelled with a Q.
It's just so great.
There's a box on the lower right where it's one-click enlistment, where you can just click in it.
Yeah, like, that's another thing, too. Like, with the first movie, the internet was probably just starting.
Yeah.
Was, you know, and now we have smart TVs, right?
Sure,
so, like,
sure.
The way you can just order a movie off TV, you can just enlist in the military to fight.
That's one of the things, and it definitely, with this podcast, we talk about how things evolve from the first one. And in the first one, they really kind of saw the way things were going with sort of interactive media. And they definitely sort of incorporated a lot of new stuff with this. So you definitely see that. You definitely see a lot of the, what do you think? It's funny, I didn't even really think about it until we talked about it, but making people think that they have an opinion when really the decisions are already made for them. Ed Neumeier, man, God bless him. He's a brilliant dude.
So Rico and his crew, he like puts a crew together, right? Which I thought was really cool. Like, he has the girl with the accent join him, but then he also gets like a bunch of other troopers, and they go into the Marauder program, where they're going to pilot these awesome battle armor Robotech suits and everything like that.
Yeah. The mech suits. And the original book, Starship Troopers, there's not a lot of similarities between the original Robert Heinlein book and the movie series. But in the book, part of being a Starship Trooper was having these superpowered suits.
So you're more than likely aware that I've sort of stopped doing book club for the time being on this show.
Yes.
And it's not like I would have read the original Starship Troopers anyway. There's no novelization for the movie or part three or any of that. But I have read that book a while ago. And one thing that struck me was it felt like I was reading like a manifesto or something, like Robert Heinlein's crazy military manifesto. Basically, I was kind of stunned about how different the original movie was, but sort of still kept the spirit and the ideas, like all that stuff about like the fascist society they live in and like brainwashing and the nationalism and all that stuff, like that's in the book too and stuff. But the weird thing about the book is that it's like this mixed society, right? Like, it's not like they're Nazis, because everyone of every different race and color are unified to fight the bugs. So it's a very strange vision of the future in that book that also is kind of a difficult read, I thought.
Well, yeah, well, Michael Ironside's character is sort of the link to the original text. And basically, Robert Heinlein, he fought in World War II and he came back and he saw the teenagers of the 50s who took everything for granted and were just kind of hanging out at the sock hop or whatever.
Cruising the strip.
Yeah, exactly. And he was like, you should have to fight in a war to have the benefits of society. These people who've never had to sacrifice anything shouldn't have the benefits that we do, because we had to fight.
He didn't like how they felt entitled to what he fought for.
And so, you know, service guarantees citizenship. That's where it all came from.
So back to this movie real quick. I mean, we're kind of getting toward the end. This movie does not overstay its welcome, which I like about it, too.
Yeah,
like,
it definitely goes quick.
And I was surprised. Like, I could probably watch, like, a full hour of just the newsreel footage type of stuff, but they use it really well and pretty sparingly, considered they could really just smash cut in anytime they want to explain away what they need to. They really don't need to. I'm just constantly, like, pleased by this movie the more it goes on. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's one of those things where I like it more and more the longer it goes on and the more that I'm watching it. I really am feeling just that energy of the first one, or trying to capture that spirit. And it also kind of feels like, you know, they saw that second movie and they're like, okay, this works, but since this was a success, let's try and move it back more into the direction of the first movie, you know? So maybe there's something to be said that, like, going so far away from the formula with the second movie is why they were able to come back to it, you know, so hard and so strong.
Yeah, for sure. And also, like, you know, obviously there were budget constraints. You know, the first movie is known for these huge action set pieces where the Starship Troopers are battling hordes of bugs. And they just can't do that. You know, obviously in the second one, they couldn't really do that at all. They can do it a little bit more in the third one. It kind of surprised me, like, whenever they come across the bugs are in, like, groups of five. And that kind of, it's like, really? I've never seen them in groups less than 10,000. But, you know, because of those constraints, they're able to get more into the intricacies of the government, of the propaganda, of all these more subtle ideas that the first one definitely got into.
Which makes me wonder about the second one, if he was given sort of some restrictions, if he was like, this has to be, you know, more action heavy. We don't want you jumping around too much. You know, we don't want people reading too hard into this one. You know what I'm saying? We need less of that subtext, that kind of thing. And then they were like, you know what? Now that we're doing another one, like, go hog wild, like, go nuts with it. And it's not like he went crazy with it either. Like, I feel like this has, like, just the right amount of stuff going on. You know what I mean? You know when you're, like, watching a movie and sometimes you're just like, well, most of the time you're just like, there's just too much going on. They cram too much into this. And then other times you're like, well, I could, like, totally use an extra scene or two. I feel like this is really well tempered throughout. Like, it's just what you need.
Yeah.
And we haven't even gotten to my favorite part yet, which is coming up.
Oh, well, get to it. Tell me all about it.
All right. So I knew that they were sort of teasing something big towards the end here, when, you know, I was like, oh, there's, like, big bugs under the planet and all this kind of thing. But I had no idea. I was not prepared. I was in no way ready for what actually happens at the end of this movie on that desert planet. We find out the Sky Marshal has been sort of leading these troopers into a trap, and he meets up with, we get this huge reveal that he meets up with, like, the planet bug. I'm not even sure what this thing's called. I called it the kaiju bug.
Yeah.
This thing is, like, enormous. Like, I was freaking out. Like, I was getting Lovecraftian Cthulhu vibes from this monster. Like, I was getting old gods kinds of things. Like, I was losing my mind as to how cool. I thought this was fucking awesome.
Yeah, it's so cool. I called it the brain god. But it's like, I remember, you know, everybody remembers the first time they saw Starship Troopers and they saw the brain bug. And it's like, what the fuck? Like, holy shit. And this kind of takes it to a new level, because this is like the brain bug if the brain bug took up an eighth of a planet. Yeah.
Like, I don't even, it's so hard to describe. Like, he kind of looks like Castle Grayskull, right? Like, he's like almost this giant, weird engineer looking thing with it when he's got his helmet on. But then he's also like miles and miles long, and you can, like, they're, like, standing inside him at one point,
yeah.
And he's controlling dead humans and making them talk for him to talk. I was so creeped out by that. I was so happy for this movie to get to that moment. I was not expecting it whatsoever.
Yeah, I mean, when I saw everything that this brain god bug could do, I was like, I want a Marvel Universe scope of the Starship Troopers universe. I want to know everything that goes on here because there's so much cool stuff. Not only with the bugs and all the different kinds of shit the bugs can do and all the kind, but all the kinds of stuff the government is up to. There's so much cool stuff to get into with this world. Everything I loved about the first movie, this gets into it more. Of course it's lower budget. Like, of course it doesn't have big stars. It doesn't have the kind of effects, but the ideas are there and it's really working for me.
Yeah, and I might not know any of these people aside from Casper Van Dien, who I barely know outside of Starship Troopers, but they're working for me. Like, it's one of those times where I'm like, I don't care that I don't know. It's almost better that they're not big stars because I can just think of them as the character. I don't have to worry about what else they're bringing to the screen from other movies or whatever or things like that.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, you know, I've seen my share of sci-fi original movies, and these performances are definitely above that caliber. But also, like in the first movie, they like I said, they picked these actors whose, you know, the only other thing on their resume was a guest appearance on Melrose Place because they wanted these kind of blank slate, fresh-faced, the kind of actors that they would put in a propaganda movie. And in this movie, they're actually doing a really good job. Everybody.
One thing that I was thinking about, too, while we were just talking about how well this movie sort of builds out the world more, is like, I haven't gone back and watched the first one since watching the third one, but knowing what I know now about the world of Starship Troopers, I wonder if it's going to add, like, yet another layer to rewatching that first one, knowing, like, what happens to Rico, knowing that there's more going on to the government than we're privy to, all that kind of stuff. There's almost, like, an extra level if you went back and watched that first one again after watching this one. Like, I don't usually get that feeling, like, after watching the third in a movie, saying, like, oh, I'll go back and it'll change the way the first one was. Usually they're retconning stuff from the first movie or second movie, changing it to fix the story they now want to tell. But I just feel like I was so surprised about how well this was a continuation and how much it felt, even though, like we've been saying all night, yes, the budget isn't there, the heart is there. You know, the writer, it's the same writer and you can feel his writing. That's maybe what I'm getting at. Like, yeah. It just, you can feel it in its bones and the DNA is strong and it's there and it's definitely coming through in this one.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I was recently a guest on the Too Fast, Too Forever podcast talking about a different series of films. And one of the things I was thinking about was how, as the films go on, they have to kind of retcon a lot of stuff. They have to be like, oh, we always meant this to be there. It's sort of like the Back to the Future movies, where it's like, Marty always was mad about being called a chicken, but really he wasn't. It wasn't until the second or third movie. But with these movies, and I totally get what you're seeing, like, you see the glimmers of these ideas in the first one, and it's so cool that Ed Neumeier, the writer of the first one who got to direct this one, he was like, I get a chance to expand on my ideas. I know where this can go, and he got a chance to go there, and that's really cool.
He does a really good job of not like mimicking Verhoeven stuff because it's not as sharp as him, but he's just so familiar with this world, right? That I feel like his directing is super competent. I mean, I don't know that he's ever directed anything else. I'm not aware. But to say, like, it feels kind of like Verhoeven at times, and yet, like, he's, you know, making do with less and sort of, you could tell, like, there's some scenes that just take place in like a white hallway, right? Just because. Like, they just don't have the funds, so we're just going to walk down a white hallway, and it's just more about what we're saying and stuff. And so it's really interesting how the writer is directing it, and I'm sure he can tell when and where he really needs to show stuff, right? Or when and where he can just talk about certain things. And so I really think, like, he's making a great use of the budgetary limitations or whatever, all the restraints that he has. Like, he's a very strong director to be pulling this off. Like, I give him all the credit in the world for something that should, by all means, you know, play after Sharp Sharknado, and yet like deserves to be run like, you know, in a triple feature at like a draft house somewhere or something.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. This movie is, I think the theme of this movie is that it's so much better than it should be. And it looks so much better than it should. You look at a sci-fi original movie that takes place in like, you know, some kind of futuristic laboratory, and it's so cheap looking. And nothing about this movie is cheap looking. Like, it looks good.
And that, again, I just have that God bug, whatever. I mean, it's just so crazy. Like, I know I'm gonna have like a nightmare one day about that thing. I'm just so impressed with the scope of it and the imagination of it. And, you know, he eats the Sky Marshal. Like, that is just terrifying.
Yeah.
To me.
Yeah. I mean, there are scenes in the second one where the mind control bugs crawl down people's throats and come up through their throats, and that looks really cool. And it's definitely like, you know, Ed Neumeier probably was like, well, you know what? I worked with Verhoeven. I've seen the shit that Verhoeven does. I'm going to throw some of that in there. And so, you know, at the end, the Sky Marshal goes to meet with the Brain God, and he has this communion, this great communion with the Brain Bug. Because the Brain Bug is basically like, and it's kind of an old theme where it's like, we're going to bring peace. Everything will be peaceful when we rule everything.
Yeah, it's like the Sky Marshal only heard the first half of the sentence.
Yes, yes.
He's like, we'll bring peace to everyone.
Yeah.
But the rest of the sentence is, once the humans are all gone.
Yeah. And that's when Rico and the rest of his mech squad show up, and it's like the second coming of Jesus, and they lay down their holy laser gun fire and crack the planet open, because that's the only way they can destroy this bug that is literally half of a planet, which is fucking awesome.
What I really loved about Rico and the Marauders coming down and stuff is that all hope is totally lost. The God Bug is gonna eat all the troopers left. There's the two girls, there's Lola and the religious girl left, and she's like, pray with me, God will protect us. And they start doing, I think it's like the Our Father, Lord in Heaven, hallowed be thy name kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah.
And then suddenly Rico and the Marauders are like airdropped from space, and they form like this halo around the girl praying. And I was like, this is payoff. This isn't cheesy. This isn't dumb. Like, this is great because it's coincidence and it's convincing her. To her, she's like, this is God's doing his thing. But it's just like the total coincidence, you know?
Yeah.
But like, it's all about timing. But it's just such a great commentary on how we can be thinking it's one thing, even if it's something else. Like, oh, she's never got a doubt in her mind now that is a sign from God.
Yeah. I mean, they basically, they're like, God is real because God brought us these giant mech suited dudes who blew up a planet. And that takes us into the ending, which, like, the first one is a newsreel, but it's so much more than the ending of the first one, because it announces the Federation turning into a theocracy. They realize that the Sky Marshal and this whole incident on the planet has these religious overtones, and they realize the power of religion. So instead of fighting religion like they have throughout the whole movie and saying that, you know, religion is wrong, you know, a lot of the war protesters were using religion as a motive. Now the government is all about religion, and Dix and Lola get married, and it's, you know, a sort of like Prince Harry kind of situation.
Yeah, right? It's like they're celebrity married troopers.
One of the things I noticed is that I remember, I love in old newsreels where the narrator addresses whoever's being filmed, where they're like, hey, you two. They do that. They're like, back to the good fight, you two. Stop smooching.
Yeah, there's a great line that they have at the end where they're like, God is on our side.
Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah. I love that. I love that now there's a whole nother element. And this is definitely, you know, Ed Neumeier again. I've said his name maybe 100 times during this podcast, but he is bringing this idea of the government using religion to sort of, they're like, hey, this is a great tool to control people.
Yeah, it's just like the voting. What do you think about it? And it's a whole other level of control that I'm frankly surprised they hadn't tried to like work that angle before. But I was also thinking, you know, this seems like an idea that's been bouncing around in his head for a while, and they probably just couldn't fit it into that first movie. But I could totally see him like holding on to this idea, being like, this has to get into a Starship Troopers movie one day, you know, just this comment, because it fits so perfectly into the world and into the way of thinking and into the government's way of control and everything. And so I feel like it's very organic to the story of Starship Troopers to introduce the topic of religion and using religion or not, and how they ultimately are like, yeah, of course we're gonna take advantage of this now that it's like working for us, so we're just gonna exploit that too as far and as hard as we can.
Yeah, I mean, you know, like I said before, it's like he had this world to play with in the first one, and when it was over, he was like, oh man, there's so much more I could do with this world. And then the second one came around and they were like, all right, well, it can only take place in one location. And he was like, all right, I'll do what I can with that. And then for the third one, they were like, do whatever you want. And he did, and he took his ideas and he expanded on them. And that's what this podcast is about. It's like seeing where ideas evolve, and a lot of times they don't evolve.
That's very well said. The last thing I would have imagined is that Starship Troopers 3 would be one of the most sound, competent part 3s that I've reviewed so far, you know? And I mean, I've done Aliens and Jaws and stuff, and like, I've done a couple of the big ones, and it's like, this is one of the best examples of like how to do a part 3. It's getting back to basics as far as like structure, but as far as content, it's total world building, like scene by scene, almost every scene. It's like, it reminds me of the John Wick movies in a way like that, where it's like each one just pulls back the curtain of that world a little more and a little more as the movie goes along, until by the end of it, you're seeing through like a whole different type of glasses or something. Like, you know, it's like you thought you knew Starship Troopers, but it's like now you really get to know Starship Troopers.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like there's two kinds of part threes. There's the part three that only exists because they just kept going to milk it. And then there are the part threes where they saw room to evolve, they saw room to grow, and they got there.
Yeah, and I guess to like the untrained eye or watcher or whatever, like this might feel like a cash grab, right? Like it totally to me.
Oh, what? Who was making cash off this?
Well, not in that way, but in a way of like, oh, we've got this IP, let's just run it into the ground, sure, kind of thing. But instead they were like, no, we've got this IP, like we can actually build this and do something more with it. Like, I'm just grateful that they tried to take it seriously, that they wanted to, that they kept the writer for all three movies, and then they gave him a chance to direct one.
Yeah, it could have been a really soulless just way to keep the franchise on life support. Where was the, was this direct to video? Was this on Sci-Fi?
I don't think it debuted on Sci-Fi. It doesn't seem like a made for Sci-Fi movie in the way that the second one may have been. I'm not even sure about that, but it's definitely somewhere in that straight to video zone.
Yeah, I mean, I know there's a fourth one.
Is there really?
Yeah, there is. It's called Traitors of Mars, I think.
Wait, what? Because I got the trilogy pack, I would have thought they would have had a four pack if there was a fourth one.
Yeah, it was released last year. Dina Meyer comes back. Oh my God, writer Ed Neumeier. Holy shit.
Oh shit.
He is dedicated to this franchise. God bless him.
It's crazy because I was going to ask you, you know, what would you want to see out of like part four? Like, where could they take it with the religion? What would they do with these suits? Because the mech suits look great. Like, I was shocked. Yeah. I was like, holy shit. For this budget, I was stunned. And the rescue is a little short, but it's still really cool. It's still cool looking. It's a lot of fun. But like, just based on what we saw tonight, like, what kind of thread, where would you want to take Starship Troopers?
I mean, the thing about Starship Troopers is that it could go on forever because the war is going to go on forever. They can do whatever they want because all they have to do is come up with more justifications for them to keep fighting. Just like real life, and more media manipulation, just like real life. You know, there's so many directions they can go with it. Introducing religion into it is cool. I'm kind of wondering if that carries into the fourth one. But the whole purpose of the film series is that we can be talked into supporting anything if it sounds good enough. It's kind of scary that the Starship Troopers series could go on forever.
And that it's the one most closely holding the mirror up to society today.
Yeah.
No, it's true, man. I'm going to definitely check out part four. I wasn't aware that existed, but what I want to see is more Casper Van Dien. You know, I hope it would be cool if he comes back for four. I would eventually like to see, you know, Rico as Sky Marshal running Earth. Because what would be cool about that is, like, here's someone who's gone through the whole system and you'd have thought by now he'd have figured it out. But no, like, he is the ultimate brainwashed guy, like, out of
true.
All of them.
Yeah, like, towards the end of the movie, you know, even though he's seen the machinations of the government, he's just like, look, I'm just meeting the grinder, man. Like, he will never be in the upper echelon. He doesn't want to be in the upper echelon because that's just not how his brain works.
I love how, like, when him and Dix both find out, like, the truth, quote-unquote, about the government, Dix is all, like, disillusioned, and Rico's like, dude, you know, we all got our roles, like, don't even think about it, because that's not your job, you know? And, like, to have him persevere throughout the entire series.
It's true. I mean, as much as I would love to see Johnny Rico as a Sky Marshal, he's not the kind of guy who would become a Sky Marshal. Because they want someone who will be a big phony celebrity, like, you know, Sky Marshal Aoki or whatever his name was. You know, a guy who'll go up there and record a hit single and sell merchandise.
Yeah, Rico reminds me more, like, as an older guy, he'll be more of, like, in the first movie, his drill instructor who, like, bumped himself down to private so he could fight again in the war. And
yes. Well, in the second movie, you watch the second movie. So in the second movie, they come across the guy who betrayed the government. But he is this, like, badass soldier. And he was supposed to be played by Clancy Brown.
Oh, no shit.
From the first movie. But Clancy Brown was busy with another project, so they used someone else. That would have been perfect. You know what's interesting? In the fourth movie, the big thing is that Dina Meyer, who plays Dizzy, is back. And Dizzy has a famous death in the first one.
It's crazy. Like, what is that about?
But I mean, I guess I'm a big Melrose Place fan. And a lot of the actors, let's face it, all of the actors from Melrose Place have gone on to be mainstays in either the Hallmark or sci-fi circuit of films. You know, a lot of those people just sort of appear everywhere. And I'm surprised that more of them have not come back. Patrick Muldoon. What's her name? Who played Carmen Ibanez in the first one?
Denise Richards.
Denise Richards. Yeah. We can edit this to make it sound like we knew it right away.
Yeah. There's that other girl, the blonde girl from, like, Road Trip and Starsky and Hutch.
Amy Adams. Amy Adams. Didn't Amy Adams win an Academy Award?
No, not Amy Adams.
Oh. Amy Adams had a small part in the original.
Amy Smart.
Amy Smart, that's right, Amy Smart. Yeah, she was in Road Trip, The Butterfly Effect, Just Friends. My apologies to Amy Smart, to Amy Adams for mixing her up with Amy Smart. Amy Adams, of course, from Arrival and American Hustle, not from Starship Troopers.
Well, Larson, any other notes about Starship Troopers? Not just Marauders, but, you know, the series in general, anything you got to get off your chest about 1, 2, 3?
Honestly, well, the only thing I wanted to mention was that at the beginning, you know, a lot of times, especially with low budget movies, I pay attention to the production companies at the beginning that are financing them. You know, nowadays there are about 10 to 12 production companies whose logos come up before a movie. And one of them was Film Africa. And I've seen some of the, what are they, Wakaiwood? There are a lot of action films that come out of Africa these days. And it's a booming business. And they made a documentary about them. There's a great one called Who Killed Captain Alex? They're batshit crazy. Filmed, you know, it's just a bunch of guys in Kenya or whatever with a camcorder who go out into the woods with terrible CGI.
It's like Neil Breen type stuff.
And yeah, definitely Neil Breen stuff. And they make these insane action movies. You know, a lot of them, they travel around the country showing them. There's so much heart to them because it's just dudes in the jungle. And they grew up watching Predator and Commando and all these movies, and they want to make their own. And unlike Neil Breen or Tommy Wiseau, they're not doing it as a vanity project. They're doing it because they fucking love it. And they're terrible, of course, but they're just great. Definitely look into, I think it's called Wakaiwood. It's like Bollywood. But there's a region in Africa where these action movies are coming out of. And when I saw financed by Film Africa at the beginning, I was like, oh man, this is going to be crazy. It wasn't like that at all, but it is pretty interesting that they got some of their funding, at least, from somewhere in Africa. The other thing was, there's a scene early in the movie when Dix and Rico are talking to the farmers in the mess hall, and someone is recording it with you know, a camcorder or a future camcorder or whatever. And you see the graphics, the in-camera graphics, and they have the WT thing on the bottom right, where it's like, you know, zoom in and out, the WT. And I was like, it's the future. Like, why do they still have that? But then again, the farmers are still wearing overalls, so who knows?
But that is kind of funny. Like, I think about that from time to time on futuristic shows and things where it's like, well, if this is so advanced, why isn't that advanced anymore or whatever, or things like that. But then I also think, especially in Starship Troopers times, you know, how much new shit do you think they're really making that aren't like guns or spaceships or armor? And I'm sure they're like, you know, using old cameras and things like that if they need to.
That's true. That's
especially
true.
This third world
yeah.
That this planet seems to be making up.
Absolutely.
Man, that's great. Yeah, dude. So, Larson, thank you so much for watching this and for discussing it with me. I just had such a great time. I mean, you know, my expectations were underground with the brain bug. Like, I just, because that first one's so great, you know, and yeah. I had such a rough time with the second one. And then to get to the third one and just be so pleased and so satisfied.
Very true. I was not expecting how, I think you said it very well. I was not expecting how satisfied I'd be by the third movie. And this was an excellent conversation about it. I always love an opportunity to chat with you.
Well, I hope you will come back again soon sometime. I have a whole stack of movies with your name on it.
Yes, absolutely. I'd love to come back and chat about literally anything.
Well, I guess until next time, would you like to know more?
It's a good day to die when you know the reasons why. Citizens, we fight for what is right. A noble sacrifice. When duty calls, you pay the price. For the Federation, I will give my life.
Alright, so there you have it, citizens. Starship Troopers 3, Marauder, who would have thought? I loved it. Loved it. I liked it. I like it a lot. Alright? Anyway, I gotta thank Larson for coming by. Oh, I'm sorry, Sky Marshal Larson for coming by today and talking all things Starship Troopers, bringing extra bug repellent, getting into like the awesomeness and craziness of the expanded universe of Starship Troopers. You know, you could always check Larson out on his past episodes of the legendary Monkey Club, still up there on the Cage Club website. Him and Chris Podcast. This is co-host there, and I'm on the Planet of the Apes episode. Still to this day, I think, since I was 13, my favorite movie. Anyway, so that's going to wrap it up for this episode. For all things Third Time's a Charm, you can go to cageclub.me, check out all the past episodes, all the other episodes of all the other shows on the network. You know, you could also go to facebook.com/cageclub, @cageclubpod on Twitter and Instagram. We have a Threadless shop. We have a Patreon site. All can be reached over at cageclub.me. Donate to the show, dictate what we watch, what you want to listen to, what you want to hear us talk about. Find this show anywhere you find podcasts on the internet. Write to me at three@cageclub.me. That's 3@cageclub.me. Also, catch me every alternating Fridays on the Tom Tom Club with Joey over there, and we are going through the filmographies of Tom Hanks and Tom Cruise, alternating Fridays. Check it out. It's been a lot of fun. Very interesting. A lot of good guests, a lot of good times, a lot of good movies. Fridays are for fun. So until next time, would you like to know more?
Three, that's a magic number. Yes, three. It is. It's the magic number. Three may stub at me, and that's a magic number.
What does it all mean?